What is... Dax, are you...
Tracking all our cars on Carvana Value Tracker? On all our devices? Yes, Kristen, yes I am.
Well, I've been looking for my phone for...
In Dax's domain, we see all. So we always know what our cars are worth.
All of them?
All of them. Value surge! Trucks up 3.9%!
That's a great offer.
I know. Sell?
Sell.
Track your car's value with Carvana Value Tracker today.
It's sad without Bob, isn't it?
Yeah, it is. You're already singing to yourself, and Bob has been gone for 5 minutes.
I miss him already.
Me too.
But we forge ahead here on Pomp and Joe. Welcome aboard. Fan Twitter brought to you by South Hills Kia Peters Township. Visit them at southhillskia.net. Before we get to this pirate stuff, this was another, yet another advertisement reminder, the divisional playoffs, the Philly game in particular, but also the Buffalo game, about how domes are a scourge upon the earth, a scourge upon the NFL. I mean, you work if you're Philly and Buffalo to get that home field advantage, to have teams unable to hold on to the ball. The Philly game was legendary limits. It was absolutely legendary. You couldn't even see the yard markers. You had people running out there trying to clear a path, clear a little spot for the kicker. So you had guys kicking away the snow. It just adds so much entertainment value. It pops off the television screen. It becomes that much more riveting when you have a situation like that where people have to deal with the elements, which is part of what football is all about. I've railed about this many times on this show, and it just reminded me again, like, it still would have been a good game in a dome, but not like that. It would have been a different sport. I can't stand indoor football.
It probably would have been a better game because Full Skill is able to come out on a, you know, field that's not disrupted by snow and the elements and stuff like that. I do think from an aesthetic showcase, it's really cool to watch a snow game.
Isn't it?
Now, would I want to be sitting in the stadium watching it in 5 degrees if my team loses? Absolutely not. If they win, then you feel a lot better about the outcome in the situation, but...
Yeah, and then you mentioned that during the break. That's the other thing, though.
I would not limits. Like... I was at the Cincinnati game, and they lost, and I was freezing, and maybe because I was wearing too many socks, as a lot of our listeners were pointing out.
Yeah.
But that was miserable. Like, that
was
not fun.
Well, yeah, if they lose, but every time I see a game like that in those kinds of conditions, the fans look very, very happy, thrilled. It's part of the experience. It's a rare chance for any of us these days, when we're all addicted to our little devices, to be alive.
I'm glad you
said that. People look alive. The Bills fans looked happy. The Eagles fans looked thrilled. The Chiefs fans looked happy. It's part of a communal experience to be out in the cold, out in the snow, alive and living and breathing and not staring at our phones.
I saw a couple people in the Philadelphia crowd that they showed shots of that looked like they were in the AB cryotherapy machine. They looked absolutely frigid. So maybe not everybody, but when you
most
win,
of
it's
them,
a lot better.
It looks like a gleeful time to me. I've been there. I mean, that was part of the experience. It's part of being in Pittsburgh, to drag a team in here and force them to deal with the elements. At least I always thought so. That's part of it. I think this gets to the changing nature of fan bases, too, where, you know, the common person's sort of been priced out of a lot of places.
Which sucks.
So, yeah, but people with tons of money, you know, can afford to be indoors, prefer to be indoors, blah, blah, blah. I'd rather have the old kinds of crowds myself.
Yeah, we're the common folk. We want to be able to go to the game. The Super Bowl's become a corporate event.
I want the Super Bowl out in the snow, too, but everybody hates me for that.
Yeah, I don't like that.
But these games, I mean, this is just part of it, right? I mean, if you're listening, isn't this like a day like today, if the Steelers had a playoff game today? Tonight, on Monday Night Football, in the wild card round. It'd be unbelievable, wouldn't it? Even if you were out there braving the elements. That's just part of the fun. It used to be for me. I understand that for some people, it's like not survivable and not fun at all. If you have medical conditions or you're older, things like that, I get it. But I think for the majority of the fan base, it's a celebratory time to have home games in weather like this in cities where that kind of weather sort of is emblematic of the city itself. There was nothing better, and it must have been 30 years ago, I guess. Is that 1992? 30 years ago? 32 years ago?
Yeah.
sitting outside in the snow, and it was a soft snow that was falling and sticking at then Rich Stadium with Dan Marino and Jim Kelly in a snowball shootout. And it was unbelievable. I'll never forget it. It would have been fun indoors. I'm not saying that. Of course it would have, but it was especially memorable because it was outside, and part of the ritual there, part of being in that city, its personality, is to drag a team from a place like Miami up to Orchard Park, New York, and have a ritualistic slaughter in the snow. And the same things have happened here. Take your team from Houston, your little Oilers and their little Astrodome, and bring them to Three Rivers Stadium and put them on an ice bath of a field, and you get a Sports Illustrated cover with Terry Bradshaw sliding through the ice bath with the headline "Splash Down to the Super Bowl." That's football. That's what it's supposed to be. And they're going to ruin it like they ruin everything else. And I don't even know who they is, but they ruin everything.
The Dome Constructors.
Can't stand it. You watched that game yesterday. It was unbelievably riveting. It's like watching a movie. You couldn't even see the sidelines. You didn't know where they were on the field. The Rams are having to deal with this coming from a warm weather climate. They're dropping the ball all over the place, and yet they almost conquered it. I left the room after the Barkley touchdown, the second one, like, all right, the game's over, and then all of a sudden the Rams have the ball and they're driving for the tying score. What a great game, enhanced completely by the weather. Here's the game I was at limits. January 12th, 1991. I was drunk, and it was Jim Kelly against Dan Marino. And the score was 27-17 at the half and wound up 44-34. An unbelievable battle in deep snow. Marino goes 23 of 49 for 323, three touchdowns. Kelly goes 19 of 29 for 339 and three. These dudes combined for almost 700 yards passing and six touchdowns. And I was there, and it was incredible. Thurman at 117 yards rushing. That's the beauty of it. And I know a lot of you were there, whether it was the 70s, whether it was Bettis running over Urlacher. Get the hell out of here with your dome stadium ideas. I don't know. Do people agree with me? Or have we reached the point where most of the callers would say something like, I prefer to be in a dome?
No, I think some people are shifting towards domes the more and more that are built. Like, I am not a dome guy. I like outside stadiums, and I'm fine with the elements, especially watching it on TV more so than anything. But I've also watched games in domes where it's been 10 degrees outside, and I'm like, hey, I could wear a jersey and a nice T-shirt or something comfortable and feel completely good about it. But I still think it does. I'm with you that football should be outside. Football everywhere. College football is outside. High school football, outside. I mean, do we play basketball outside, you know, for high school and then move it indoors for the pros? So, I don't know. It might not be the best comparison, but I'm with you that football should be played in the elements no matter what, even if it's not fun for the fans.
It goes the other way around too. The Dolphins get to drag people into Miami. The Broncos get to bring people up in the altitude. 412-928-9370 on that one. I just thought that was a huge storyline this weekend, was weather and memorable games. I love it. I look back at so many weather football games. I think it's what helped make the league. I'll go that far. I think the fact that it's easily bet on football, and the fact that NFL films arrived, and the fact that people like Dan Rooney and others convinced the largest market owners to share national TV revenues so that everybody would have a chance to win, are like the three biggest factors in the rise of the NFL is by far America sport. But NFL films is right there with the way that they would mythologize the game and some of the famous weather games like the Ice Bowl in Green Bay. Just incredible stuff. The fog game in Philly. The Steelers had a fog playoff game in New England one year, as I recall. I was watching that game at my friend Frank Benkowski's parents' house in Ambridge. Absolutely incredulent. I could think of 30 games off the top of my head. the Eli Manning game in Green Bay where everybody was frozen. It looked like Tom Coughlin's nose froze off. Remember that game limits?
I do.
The Steelers and the Oilers. Earl Campbell, little different running against that defense in an ice storm than it is in your cozy little Astrodome, ain't it, Earl?
Well, you could also have cold weather Cleveland coming to Pittsburgh and winning in a playoff game when there were no fans in the stands either in 2020, where the weather played a little bit of a factor, not really, but so, I mean, it.
What?
Sometimes it works. What I'm saying is, you know, you're talking about how much of a difference it could be for cold weather teams that come into a stadium. And
I mean, at this point, I'm just talking about how memorable it is simply to have games in those elements.
Yeah.
I could think of 100 more all over the league. You know, games in Minnesota, the institution of the Hail Mary pass to Drew Pearson all those years ago. And when the Vikings went indoors, that was the beginning of the end for pro football as I knew it.
When Minnesota got a dome.
The Minnesota Vikings indoors. You kidding me? That was their whole personality, was you had to go up into Bloomington and Bud Grant would go out there practically in a sleeveless T-shirt. Next thing you know, they're playing on a carpet with the thermostat turned up to 72.5. Get out of here! 412-928-9370. Lambeau, you can think of a million games there. You know, I once did a story about the first replay limits.
No, what was it?
I'm not talking about replay review. I'm talking about the first instant replay in the history of football in this country. It was an Army-Navy game right after the JFK assassination. The first Army-Navy game after that, shortly after that. And it was Raleigh Stitchway, who I believe was the Army quarterback. They had instant replay. Tony Verna was the director for CBS Sports, and the machine that they were bringing to get these replays working was like a giant, I don't even know what to call it, oven or something that you had to transport by truck to Philly, which is where the game was. And they didn't know if it would work.
The back of the monitor was like 3 feet deep.
Yes, you didn't know if it would work, this replay machine. They would cut to it during practice when they were practicing with it, and it would go to clips of I Love Lucy and stuff like that.
Oh, that's fun.
So they didn't know if it would work, but this guy had the you-know-whats to do it live.
Any Gilligan's Isle in the snow?
With the whole country watching Army-Navy, and Raleigh Stitchway ran for a touchdown. I think it was Lindsey Nelson, whoever was doing the game, said, because they showed it immediately at full speed again. It wasn't slow motion replay yet, right?
Yeah.
He told the country, Raleigh Stitchway did not just run for another touchdown because it looked like it on the screen. He ran and then they show him running again. That was the first replay. My point in all that was Tony Verna, I interviewed him 1 year and he also talked about the Ice Bowl. And you have the famous shot from behind the Cowboys line in the end zone where Bart Starr comes right into your screen with the famous touchdown. The only reason they had that angle was because the dude's camera froze. Yeah. It froze in the end zone. This is a story time with Grandpa Joe now that I think about it.
I'm pulling up a chair with my hot cocoa by the fire.
So this guy was supposed to be focused on the outside of the line or something, or in case there was a pass to a receiver, and his camera froze. So he got one of the most famous shots in NFL history. I'm just sickened by the dome talk. I'm sorry, Limits, for going off on that tangent.
That's okay. The Texters do agree with you, though, that they like watching football outside in the elements. But somebody else said that being in their 60s, they like being inside with a warm, dry, and comfortable climate.
I understand that. But I would imagine that person doesn't want to go to games anyway, right?
Somebody else said that they were at the Bettis Urlacher game and it was one of the best experiences of a game that they've ever had. Two Texters actually said that.
Said what?
That they were at the Bettis Urlacher game. Bettis running over Urlacher at the goal line.
That was phenomenal.
In
that,
the snow?
And on top of everything else, that's the game that launched the Super Bowl run that year. They never lost from that game on, as I recall. I don't know what they won, 9 games in a row to win the Super Bowl? All right, Limits, I'm sorry that I didn't get to the Pirates, but we are going to do that next with Dan Zangrilli. He had some very interesting interviews. Let's whet the appetite for that with Paul Skeens talking about giving games away. I think he had a different phrase for that. He ain't putting up with that again this year. Let's hear his clip. This was with Zangrilli, I believe.
Yes, it was. This was skiing is actually with the media.
With the media, okay.
Yes.
Many games we should have won that we didn't, but it was more than 10 last year. I know that. And you look at teams like the Dodgers, the Tigers, the Indians, the Guardians, sorry, you know, the Yankees, teams like that that were in the playoffs, the Brewers, that were in the playoffs and we were, you know, watching from home, they didn't, you know, piss those games away.
Nope, no, they didn't.
I'm telling you, man, this guy is not going to be a wallflower
I hope
out
not.
Here this year. I'm telling you that right now.
I hope he'll be as authentic and real as I think we all know he is to be.
Give me something else good to lead us into Zangrilli. We have Reynolds talking about a set lineup. This was with Zangrilli because I was listening to it.
He wants something similar to the Braves.
I look at the Braves, you know. They've got their set guys that are always in there. Matt Olson's played, feels like 5 seasons straight without missing a game. And then all the way up and down their lineup, you know, in years past, it's just the same guys. I think that's what I'm talking about. You know what you're going to get.
Run the lineup out.
Yeah.
Fairly consistently.
Yeah, fairly consistently. Guys are in there. You got to play through some stuff because that's just the name of the game. And then, yeah, staying locked in the whole game, which I think we do a great job of. But
what's he trying to say there? That's what I'm trying to figure out.
Well, he is
because he obviously doesn't think that has happened to this point.
No, he's always the two hitter, but it seems like, and fans have been very critical of it, and we've talked about it a lot, that it seems like somebody will have a really good game hitting like the four hole, and then the next day they'll either be on the bench or they'll be hitting seventh.
Well,
like,
yeah,
even if it's like a righty lefty matchup.
That's because none of them are any good enough. Here's the problem. Instead of bringing in guys that are really good at one position, the Pirates bring in guys that stink at four different positions.
I don't disagree with that, but don't you think some consistency in their lineup could help guys where
yeah,
they know they're going to be
do.
In the lineup every time?
Of course I do.
Maybe a little bit better?
So get better players. They're going to start with Kiner Falefa as their shortstop?
It seems like that's the case. They shouldn't. They should upgrade and make Kiner Falefa, Josh Harrison, bounce around type of player.
Yeah, they have 18 of those. That's the problem.
Charrington said at Pirate Fest that it's inevitable they'll sign somebody to a multi-year contract.
Yeah, okay.
Who's still available?
None of whom are as good as Josh Harrison was at that role, by the way. Kiner Falefa can't really hit. That's a slight problem. So, yeah, I'm all for it. I'm with Brian Reynolds. You know, get that regular lineup that you can throw out and trust all the time and guys can settle in. You need good players for that. That's the problem, and it's quite a big problem, I might add. Pirate Fest happened this weekend. I was listening intermittently to my friend Dan Zangrilli doing some wonderful interviews. I heard Brian Reynolds. I heard some of Shelty. I know there are a lot of people that Dan talked to, so we figured we would talk to Dan. He's on the Sullivan Super Service fan hotline, Pittsburgh's trusted plumbing and HVAC provider for over 50 years. Bob and I and Limits here were talking about the fact that we thought that Bob Nutting absolutely should have gotten in front of the fans, Dan. But I'm curious from your perspective, give me two or three moments in any of your interviews that stood out to you.
Well, I think Friday night. When we talked to McCutchen and Skeens, Joe, that was obviously the two most important people that you want to talk to from a player perspective as it pertains to the Pirates. Skeens, obviously, but McCutchen, the last, I want to say, 3 to 4 minutes of our interview were centered around why he was bullish on the team. And I think there's plenty of reasons to say, okay, this went wrong, and you have a laundry list of things as to why your glass should be half full, and maybe two or three as to half empty as opposed to two or three as to why it should be half full. And, you know, McCutchen went on a little bit of a diatribe, and I think in a very politically savvy way said that we don't have the leadership that we need in our clubhouse, and it's going to be incumbent upon me to take a much larger role because I'm otherwise wasting my time. I've made all the money that I could make in my career, and I'm making a great sacrifice with my time away from a young, growing family that if I'm going to go ahead and commit to this, we've got to be able to do something meaningful. And he sees the ability for something meaningful to happen, but it is missing that one piece, and it is a clear leader that I don't know if necessarily has to be a singular voice. McCutchen said otherwise, but there needs to be a prominent voice to, I guess, beat the drum. And this is how we're going to go about our business. Or when things are going awry, who is going to step up? And in whatever form or fashion of leadership you need, whether it's by example, whether it's somebody to flip a table, whether it's somebody to put your arm around somebody, they have, obviously, and I think it was absolutely apparent last year, they didn't have that person. And McCutchen is not that person, right, from just his personality dynamic and makeup, but he essentially vowed to me, and he said that, I'm looking around the room here, I'm not necessarily sure that anybody else has done it or done it effectively, so I've got to be that guy based on who I am, what I've done in this game, what I know, and really what I'm capable of. And he has been a bit of a wallflower, right? There's a bit of a generational gap, right? You've got a otherwise younger team, and he's 38 years old. 15, 16 years is a Grand Canyon as far as, you know, one's a TikTok generation, another's a Facebook generation. So that's a big, big chasm. So he's going to be the adult in the room from what it sounds like. And now that Paul Skeens is in year number two, I think he's also going to speak up quite a bit. And, you know, when that voice, of course, is raised in the Pirates clubhouse, that has the opportunity to make a big time difference, because they were without it. They were a rudderless ship at times last year. And it was refreshing to hear, encouraging to hear, especially from McCutchen, because if anybody is to do it, I think he's the guy that needs to do it for all of the obvious reasons. And the fact that he's stepping out of his comfort zone, it's another thing that he's given to the city.
Why wouldn't he have stepped out of his comfort zone last year?
Yeah, and that's a fair question. That's just never been his deal, never been his thing. Even when they were winning in, you know, 12, 13, 14, 15, it was more of an A.J. Burnett, Russell Martin clubhouse. Neil Walker, I think, had more of a vocal role on those teams. And I think he's never done it because he's never needed to. And when you're not comfortable doing something, you tend not to do it, or you leave it to other people, or you try to do something a certain way, but he obviously sees a void and a need and nobody else stepping up. So he, I guess better late than never, to your point, Joe, is stepping to the forefront saying that he's going to be the guy this year.
Anybody else say anything that really jumped out to you? How about Skeens?
I mean, it's a far more comfortable guy, you know, in his skin as a leader, I think. You know, you come in to sport and in a locker room when you're a rookie, you sort of want to earn your stripes, look around, read the room, feel the room out a little bit before you start just coming in with a big brass pair and asserting this, that, or the other thing. Because when you do that without essentially having done anything in your particular sport, that's gonna lead to a lot of eye rolls, that's gonna lead to a lot of division. But clearly he now has accomplished quite a bit. He's a Cy Young finalist, he's an NL Rookie of the Year, and he accomplished a great deal in a very short period of time. So he's definitely earned that, and I think what he told the reporters as well, he seemed really sick and tired of, in his words, pissing away victories last year.
I love that quote.
It was great, and that's exactly what happened, that's exactly what needed to be said, and he was the guy that needed to say something like that in the manner and tone with disgust in his voice.
Yeah.
That's the kind of stuff that needs to happen with this team. And based on what McCutchen told me on Friday, Skeens to a certain extent, though not that, not in great detail, and then he doubled down on it yesterday with reporters, I think those two guys, that was my biggest takeaway, that they realize the shortcomings in leadership. I mean, there's all, you know, whether you need a right fielder, whether you need this, that, or that, they can't control that. What they can control is who's at the wheel, who's setting the tone, who's setting the culture. And I don't mean to call people out directly here because it's just not their thing. But, you know, maybe Andrew McCutchen was, going back to your earlier question, Joe, maybe he was waiting for, because maybe it's Mitch Keller's clubhouse. Perhaps Keller should be doing that sort of thing. Perhaps Reynolds should be doing that sort of thing. Perhaps Key Brian Hayes should be doing that thing. I'm just an older guy that's coming back to Pittsburgh to be in a supplemental, complementary role and lengthen this lineup. That's ideally what the Andrew McCutchen Pirates reunion was a couple of years ago. Not for him to come in and hit first or fourth, as he's had to do, or not come in here at 38 years old and take the wheel.
Right.
Because he's supposed to be, quote-unquote, temporary in this sequel. It's supposed to be Keller. It's supposed to be Reynolds. It's supposed to be Hayes that are doing that. And he's supposed to be, you know, the old dad, you know, standing in the background with his arms crossed with a smile on his face, satisfied having left a place better than he's found it. That's the role that Andrew McCutchen should be playing. But obviously, because nobody else seems able and willing to do that, sans Skeens, then, listen, if nobody else is going to step to the front, then I guess I got to do it, damn it.
Dan, were any of the concerns about the lineup and also the bullpen, which they haven't added any pieces to, addressed in some of the conversations you've had?
Not really. I think, you know, when you ask players, Austin, you know, to play general manager, that's something that they don't want to do. I think that Reynolds, in a roundabout way, talked about more consistency in the lineup. He would like to see that just from guys hitting in certain spots and things taking shape, but they don't necessarily have anybody. There's 3 to 4 spots that have to rotate on a nightly basis based on matchups that, you know, the guy hitting fifth isn't the guy hitting fifth for 140 nights a year. Outside of Reynolds, it's really a fluctuating thing, and he did acknowledge, essentially, that he would like to see that change. But as far as pounding the table, you know, demanding Alex Verdugo or somebody else or an Anthony Santander signing, they don't do it, haven't done it, didn't do it on Friday, Saturday, or Sunday.
Yeah, I guess in the end, to me, Dan, they could have all the leadership they want until they improve their roster. This is going nowhere.
That's paramount. And listen, there were things that last year were well within their control with the existing personnel. And I'm not suggesting that they don't need to add to this roster. Quite the contrary. But they were certainly able to achieve far more with the group that they had than they did. And leadership and accountability and blocking and tackling, ABCs, 1-2-3s. I mean, you lose 29 games when your starter goes 6 innings. You, how many times found yourself on the wrong end of a 1-run game? I mean, that's one at-bat. That's one situation. The runner in scoring position, albatross that they were last year. I mean, a lot of that can be fixed internally with accountability. But that's not to say that the front office shouldn't be working and doing more, because they absolutely should. But I think the players internally, what I walked away with was 24 leaving a pretty bitter, disgusting taste in their mouth and them being fairly ticked off about it going into 25, looking to control what they can control.
Did you get a chance to talk to Bednar?
I actually did not, just off the side. But
do you get the feeling, did Shelty or anybody say that he is it his job to lose going in here as the closer to spring training?
I think he's the incumbent. That's the general feeling that I'm getting. Now, if he has a just awful spring training, I'm sure that's subject to change. Bednar did tell us that he is eager to get back out there because of how 24 was. And it's a pain point. It's a frustration. So he's obviously eager. But nobody suggested that, I guess, he's going into spring training pitching for his job. I will make a bold prediction, though, and say that the season ends with Kyle Nicklaus as the Pirates' closer. I will say that.
Mm. Well, Dan, thank you for taking the time. It was great stuff when I had a chance to tune in. Really good interviews. I appreciate it. And I think people can hear some of those up on our website at 937thefan.com. And hopefully people are watching out there on our YouTube channel. Can subscribe to our YouTube channel, which is taking off here. Thank you, sir.
Thank you. We'll see you.
The great Dan Zangrilli. All right, coming up next, let's get back to the NFL and a little college football. Let's talk about the national championship game and whether you think that college football is better when Notre Dame is good. Notre Dame is one of those schools that usually inspires raw emotion one way or the other. Like people generally aren't of no opinion about Notre Dame. They love them or they hate them. At least I think that's still the case.